It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Alrighty, welcome to the Celtics Out Podcast, brought to you by Prize Picks, the exclusive fantasy basketball partner of the CLNS Media Network, and by Game Time Tickets, last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. This is a special edition of the Celtics Out Podcast because we are going to turn this into a crossover pod with the folks over at Locked On Cavs, specifically Evan Damorell, who's here on the call. Evan, what is up?
Not much. Fun? I mean, at least if you're rooting for the Cavs in this one, a fun game at least. But if you're just a fan of basketball, I think this is shaping up to hopefully be a fun series as it shifts to Cleveland. But how are you both doing?
I'm at TD Garden, where the mood was it was quiet as a church mouse when Jason Tatum just did his presser. Justin, how are things in Mexico?
Well, I was expecting this game. You were expecting this game. I just wasn't expecting it this soon. I was hoping it was going to happen in Cleveland.
Yeah. Well, let's do that. Let's get into what just went down in game two, and then more accurately, we'll preview the next two games, which are in Cleveland. So enjoy this special, unique mashup edition of the Celtics Lab podcast, crossed over with Locked On Cavs. Let's start with game two. Evan, you're the guest. You get first bite at the apple. Talk us through what you saw from Cleveland and how they were so successful early on. And I think it kind of turned in the second half. I'm curious what you think.
I think it kind of turned when they were down 14-5, and I'm watching this thinking, oh boy, we're about to see a rinse and repeat of game one where Cleveland goes down big early, they claw back in, make it a little bit interesting, but the Celtics are able to keep them arm's length away all throughout this game. But I think we just saw, I mean, a dramatically different Evan Mobley, who's just somebody who really stood up and stood out for me in the first half. And I think it's encouraging to see Cleveland not kind of press the issue a la from like Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. Caris LeVert obviously had a good first half too, but like Mobley was the centrifugal force for Cleveland in this game for me, at least. And it makes you wonder if he didn't have the foul trouble in the third quarter, like how much more impact he would have had. But by golly, he was very impactful. Almost had a first half triple double. I think he had 13-7-5 by the end of the first half, and really was the tone setter for Cleveland. And I think really played with how Boston or played to however Boston's defense was playing him, and was kind of focused on and mindful of the fact that like he was going to move the rock and he was going to score. And I think when he hit that three-pointer and the Celtics correctly corrected to defend the interior, I think it kind of not just surprised Boston maybe, but also just Cleveland in general, like in terms of just their folks who cover them or their fans, just because that's the first postseason three Evan Mobley had made since I believe game two or three against Orlando, which feels like a lifetime ago at this point. But Mobley, rightfully got a lot of criticism just from how inconsistent he's been all postseason. I think he has struggled with some of the physicality and just stress that comes with playing at the big man spot, not having that safety blanket and Jared Allen next to him like he's had for the better part of his career. And he's adapted pretty well in this game, and I'm morbidly curious to see how this carries back to Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, where they have the luxury of being in a friendly environment and Mobley doesn't maybe have to play with the pressure of the Boston fans and can kind of ride the momentum of Cleveland fans. And yeah, just, I don't know, stellar performance for Mobley. And like I said, the guards didn't press. And then that's where Donovan Mitchell really stood out with his playmaking. And then he just poured it on in the third quarter and kind of broke the collective spirit of Boston's fans and their players, I feel, at one point.
Yeah, that was the switch that I was identifying. It was like the Cavs were in the driver's seat, but then even if Boston, you know, considered maybe flipping the script, Mitchell just closed the door, and Celtics killer Max Strus helped. So Mitchell was great in this game, but especially just closing the door on the Celtics. I mean, honestly, 118-94, at times it didn't even feel that close. Dr. Quinn, what about you? What do you think the Cavs were doing well, or maybe what do you think Boston was not doing well?
I think the Cavs followed their game plan to a T. They came with a proper urgency that a team needs to bring in the playoffs, particularly if they're facing a higher seeded team as the Cavs are in this particular instance. I think the Celtics did what they like to do in these situations, which is think that they are God's gift to basketball, and they play like it, and they got burned by it. Credit to the Cavs for playing the way that Boston should have played in this game. I fully expect them to regain their focus as they have pretty much all season long when they lose a game like this. But the fact that it's happening in the postseason is giving me a lot of concern. And I actually wanted to ask you, Evan, what you have heard specifically about Dean Wade and more importantly, Jared Allen in terms of health, because this is a game for them to get better without any consequences on their part. For the Celtics to have to deal with in the future. And if they come back in this series, it's going to be a lot harder. It's going to take a much bigger toll on the Celtics, no matter how it ends.
Yeah. So when it comes to Jared Allen, the reporting out of Boston has been across the spectrum, and I've inquired on my own, but like, he's in excruciating pain. Like, it's hard for him to lift his arms, and given the position he plays, a lot of it's rebounding, boxing out. He's going to get elbows, blows, and contact to the affected area on his ribs. And from what Joe Vardy and the Athletic described, it's more than just a bruise. It's kind of a piercing that I think it was Franz or Mo Wagner, one of the two, just kind of aggravated in game four during that garbage time when the Cavs were getting shellacked in Orlando. But we'll see when he comes back. I would be pleasantly surprised to say he's coming back for game three, just because they have, let's just say, 24 hours in between the two games once they travel to Cleveland, for whether it's Friday or if Boston flies in Friday evening for Saturday, whatever works for the either team's schedule. But I would be surprised if Allen plays maybe at the earliest Monday if like he has a dramatic turnaround. But Dean Wade has been a bit of an anomaly too. He's been, gosh, out for so long now. He was away for personal reasons due to the birth of a child, and then when the Cavs played Houston, his knee issue started flaring up during the regular season, and he has been sidelined since then with not a lot of answers. I think the Cavs are just a team that operates like that, where they'll say a player is out when he's out, but they'll always leave his availability up to a game-time decision. So Chris Fedor of Cleveland.com tweeted that Wade may be back, and I know Boston fans might be a little, you know, not thrilled to hear that after what he did last time against the Celtics, but to be fair, Wade has not played in over a month plus at this point, so you wouldn't expect him to be like a high impact player, or a guy who is in, you know, a steady flow and rhythm in terms of his 3-point shooting or anything like that. I think he's just an additional body if you want to throw some wrinkles out there. But for what it's worth, JB Bickerstaff did notice that, at least not leading on Marcus Morris Sr. and George Niang as like your backup bigs, is a kind of beneficial, and just leaning on Tristan Thompson, which is so weird to say. Tristan Thompson's playing high impact basketball minutes in 2024, the year of our Lord, you know, clean off PEDs as well after his suspension. So we'll see what adjustments and wrinkles the Cavs make. I told my co-host Chris Manning about this as we talked about the game. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't rush back Allen or Wade. Maybe Wade comes back first. I think that'd be the case just based on what's been reported, but more so the fact that, like, with how well Mobley's looked, you want to keep leaning into this confidence, and you don't really want to give him the luxury of the slave safety blanket. Maybe you want him to feel comfortable being uncomfortable at the center spot, so you lean on that a little bit more. I think you ride this Tristan Thompson horse until it doesn't give you anything else gas-wise, but we'll see how complete this Cavs team is, and I think that also can't be really understated enough. Like, Cleveland's been undermanned in this matchup against Boston just in terms of just key pieces, especially with Allen being sidelined. But even if Allen were to come back, I think it'd be fair to question, like, does he start for the Cavs, or do they not mess with a good thing, keep this four small lineup with Mobley at center, and then just bring Allen along a little bit more slowly coming off the bench, just, you know, feel out how his rib is feeling and everything else. But also, just, you know, Boston can throw so many different looks at you that the Cavs may not be able to afford to go too bigs to open a game, just because it could turn into a disaster for them.
All right, let's pause the action and talk about our friends over at Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It's the easiest and most exciting way to get in on the action while you watch your favorite sports and players, because Prize Picks has something for every sports fan, from basketball and hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. Prize Picks even has injury insurance, so your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. It's been one of my favorite parts of using Prize Picks, and my favorite way to feel safe when I get in on the action and ensure that everything that I'm mulling over for that night's slate of games is ShipShape. So download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Download the app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. I would hazard that, yeah, to your point, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Caris LeVert was just like singularly quite good, but I think part of why Cleveland was so effective at getting to the rim was there wasn't a big hanging out, and so there wasn't a Celtics defender hanging out. Part of that has to do with the Porzingis injury. It's kind of a dog chasing its own tail there, that yeah. Two big bodies off the court. I mean, again, LeVert was quite quick. The pick and roll and like the handoff action that the Cavs do on the perimeter was really effective. That the Cavs are just very decisive, and Boston was not on defense. And so much of that quick decision-making only works when there's a lot of space. So I do think that Tristan Thompson and even Marcus Morris served admirably. But if Allen comes in as just like the de facto backup big man, and he and Mobley don't really share the court, the spacing that so far the Celtics have not really defended that much space very well, and they haven't taken advantage of that much space. So I'd be quite interested in that. I also could see a world where neither Porzingis nor Allen play. Just the nature of their injuries are tricky.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's so tricky, so you can't really evaluate it. It literally is how are they feeling moments before tip-off when you're evaluating these guys. And I mean, you want to be cautious no matter what. And I think if you are Boston or Cleveland, both teams have won without either big man. I think they can both say they are equipped to handle this series without them. I think they'd be happy to have them back. But yeah, there's no need to rush either back. And I think in Allen's case, it's been reported that the pain's so bad he has difficulty holding his arms up and things like that. And there's plenty of shots of him from the bench on the ESPN broadcast. And it's just something I've noticed whenever the Cavs have played at home during the playoffs. He's more or less glued to the bench. He doesn't get up to celebrate with his teammates. He doesn't applaud. He doesn't cheer. Like, he's sitting out there watching the game and taking mental notes of what he's seeing, and sure, he can convey that to the guys he's sitting next to, or if Evan Mobley is seated next to him on the bench rotation, like, that's helpful. But Allen is, you know, struggling. And I think just with the nature of how tricky, like you said, Cameron, like how these injuries are, you don't really want to tempt fate when it comes to this stuff. And it's also just weird to say that, like, a buyout player, Marcus Morris Sr., has become a high-impact guy for the Cavs, but it's just been one of those years for Cleveland overall.
All right. Well, before the podcast, I mentioned to you both that I think the take economy has reached a critical mass and no one is having fun watching basketball. And we were going to try to subvert that. And now here we are talking about injuries. So it's even more imperative that we do what we do our homework assignment, which was to just say one thing from this game that, as a basketball fan, sparks joy. So, Evan, you can talk about the Celtics or the Cavs, Justin, either. And I will model what that looks like, just because I think that's fair. First, I want to pause the action and quickly tell you that our friends over at Prize Picks has a new free square promotion that's coming up, and it's all about Caitlin Clark of the Indiana Fever. The Fever are facing the Connecticut Sun on May 14th, and if Caitlin scores 1 point, then your square wins. So we encourage all of our fans here at the Celtics Up podcast to check out Prize Picks and to use the promo code CLNS. And specifically coming up, Caitlin Clark's big game against the New England's own Connecticut Sun. 1 point, one win for your square. Check it out. Okay. Two things. I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to give you two things that spark joy. I've said this before. The Boston Celtics are basically like a mirror image of Brad Stevens, which is to say they don't have a big personality. But Peyton Pritchard didn't get the memo, and when he hit a few really, really impactful shots, he roared at the crowd, and that's a dude who's been patient and has told us he feels overlooked, and he had a moment, and that was cool.
You stole my homework.
Sorry. sorry, you copied.
I got another one, though. So.
Well, here's one that you might not have caught watching on television, but we got to see here. Late third, early fourth, Donovan Mitchell hit one of a few just really dagger threes. And he really shut the crowd up. I think Boston took a timeout. And there's a kid wearing a Cavs jersey courtside. I don't think Donovan noticed, but he kind of did the stunt. Like, he kind of stood and like savored the made three, and this kid just reached out for a little high five, and like last minute Donovan gave him half a high five. He like almost missed the kid entirely. And like, I don't know that kid's story. It seems like he's doing okay in life. He's sitting courtside at a playoff game, but it seems like it was a really sweet moment. And basketball is not for, you know, aging dudes on their podcast. It's for the kids. So that was my, hey, basketball is fun. That was fun. Evan, you're the guest. You can decide if you want Justin to go so you can stall, or you get to hop in if you want.
Well, just in case, Justin needs to do another quick homework assignment if he somehow had eyes in the sky there. But that is a cool moment between Mitchell and that young fan. I think, I don't know, it's always just special to see, like, you know, young fans' dreams kind of come true when they get that, you know, even 5 to 10 second interaction with the player. Like, that's something that kid will cherish forever, even if, like, he was a Cavs fan, but, you know, surrounded by a bunch of miserable Boston fans by the end, especially after.
Well, he was sitting, I don't know if Deuce was still in the house. He was like 2 seats over from Deuce Tatum. So that was even more high profile.
That's a big deal. And, I'm thinking just I could wax poetic about Evan Mobley, and again, stellar in this game. Donovan Mitchell, again, stellar in this game. I think he's exactly why the Cavs traded the farm to get him in the first place. But I'm going to instead give my shouts to Darius Garland, where he has had a very up and down season. He broke his jaw back in, actually, when he collided with Kristaps Porzingis' hip when the Cavs played Boston in December, and then missed about a month and a half, lost 15 pounds of weight, has really struggled to just to kind of draw contact and play physically and kind of play downhill. And you could tell, like, it's had a pretty direct impact on his shot profile, and like there's some tentativeness to him out there, especially with defenders hitting him harder and, you know, how physical the playoffs are. But to open the third quarter, he rips off those 2 3-pointers, and you're thinking, no, Garland's playing a little bit of spice again. Like, he is kind of feeling himself. Those are, yeah, I would say, two, like, one within the rotation of things. I think the other one you could considerably call a heat check, just because it's not really stylistic how Garland works to kind of take a lot of threes. It's one of the biggest frustrations when it comes to folks who cover the Cavs, or just fans in general, as Garland sometimes is a little too unselfish with the basketball. But my co-host and I talked about this. Like, Caris LeVert was stellar off the bench tonight, but he's been wildly inconsistent this postseason. And if you get a bad LeVert game in game 3 or 4 and Garland is still feeling himself and feeling how Boston is playing him, and he's able to find his shots just cleanly, that's a good thing, especially just for a guy whose confidence, I don't think it's wavered, but, you know, physically just and mentally, and he's dealt with plenty of things off the court as well personally, like, just to have one of those moments where he's able to hit a big shot in the playoffs when he kind of shrank against the Magic at times, and especially against the Knicks last year, it was a big moment. Hopefully that's something that's sustainable heading into this home stretch in Cleveland.
Cool. All right, Dr. Quinn, what's sparking joy?
What's sparking joy is that when I was on social media after the game, I did not see hardly anyone blaming Joe Mazzulla for this loss, which seems to be the go-to excuse in Celtics fandom anytime Boston drops a game to anyone for any reason, whether he has a role in it or not. He had, you know, mistakes in this game, but I think, you know, it's pretty hard to go through an entire NBA game in the playoffs and as a coach and not make a mistake someplace in the game. But it wasn't him tonight, right? It was an effort thing. It was a Cavs thing. It was not a Joe Mazzulla thing. And the fans seem to be aware of that, which makes me happy.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with the Celtics team and decide how many times we need to hear ourselves make that case.
I have to ask this. Are things as bad at the point where if they introduce Joe Mazzulla during pregame with the team, do the fans boo?
No,
not yet.
Oh, well, it got to that point last series for J.B. Bickerstaff toward down the stretch where they would introduce the players and Bickerstaff would, it'd be like, you know, a little bit of cheers, but then you'd hear like a healthy chorus of boos, okay, either coming from the upper bowl or just somewhere in the arena. And you're like, that's yikes. So
I'll keep an ear out, game, whatever it is, 5 and see. It didn't occur to me, but, I don't know. Boston is 15-15 at home in the playoffs. It's 21. So it can't be the coach, because Joe Mazzulla just got here.
Fair enough.
But that doesn't mean that fans are necessarily making that A to B. I don't know. We'll keep you posted on that one, because it's a fair question.
Just because I know Joe Mazzulla did draw the ire of Celtics fans, especially in his first run in the playoffs. And then I think he's been fairly solid for Boston all throughout his time as the coach.
Let's do this. Let's pause the action and talk about our friends over at GameTime.co, and then we will preview what's to come next. The NBA playoffs are heating up. Wouldn't it be great to be there live? The energy, the buzzer beaters, the chance to see the best players in the world battle it out, the Geno time. Well, getting tickets doesn't have to be a hassle, especially when you use the GameTime app like I do. That's GameTime.co. It's the best way to see your favorite sports live, and here's the best part. Prices on time go down the closer you get to tip-off. They've got flash deals. They've got zone deals. Other supports, Game Time is the best way to get tickets to any game, but it's not just the NBA. I use Game Time whenever I want to go to Fenway Park, catch the Red Sox, or when I'm headed into town for a concert. There's no more wondering about what I pay for tickets. And guess what? Game Time guarantees the lowest price. If you find a cheaper ticket, they'll credit you 110% of the difference. So ditch the ticket stress and download the Game Time app today. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code CLNS for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code CLNS for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Actually, a really funny moment before game. Charles Lee's associate coach for the Celtics just got the job in Charlotte, and someone asked Mazzulla, "Oh, like, do you have any advice or whatever?" And Mazzulla said, "Yeah, everyone's going to hate you now." So I think he was projecting a little bit, but yeah. He was aware of that characterization that you just outlined, Evan. Alrighty. Let's spend, I don't know, 12 more minutes. It's late at night here at TD Garden, but we got two games. Game 3 and Game 4 will be played in Cleveland on Saturday and then on Monday. And then they're back here in Boston on Wednesday. It's one game on, one day off from here on out. So, Evan, what do you think is sustainable from the Cavs from Game 2 that you're looking for from Game 3? Justin, I'll ask you. We'll all answer that question, and then we'll say, what should the Celtics prioritize fixing? So, Evan, what do you think that we saw from Game 2 or even from Game 1 you think is sustainable for the Cavs?
I would say, at least from either scenario, I think, you know, the three-point shooting is there for Cleveland. They did not shoot the ball well in Game 1, but Game 2, they shot it much better from the perimeter, and I think ditto for Boston. They didn't shoot the ball well in Game 2, but they shot it much, much better in Game 1. You're going to see a regression in the mean for both sides, where like it is going to turn into one of those tight situations where it could rely on a make or miss type situation for either team. And I'm not saying that could be in Game 3 or Game 4, but it's something I'm going to be taking note of with Game 3, 4, and so on, just because we've seen such wide variance on the perimeter from both teams. But when looking at Game 2, at least optimistically speaking, you hope to see more of that aggressive Evan Mobley you saw in this game, just because I would argue this is his best game as a professional up to this point in his career. Like, there's obviously room for improvement going forward, but oh no, we lost Cameron to the darkness.
Now,
but,
oh yeah,
I'm gone here. To the dark side.
I'm in.
Move around a lot.
Multi-purpose room number 3, and the motion sensor lights just went off.
There you
so
go.
For the for people on YouTube, right. You saw that went down. For the audio folks, that was probably confusing. Okay.
But Evan Mobley, if he remains aggressive, I think that'll be a very big ticket and key for success, especially if Jared Allen isn't available. And if he is, I agree still with the sentiment that maybe you bring Allen off the bench to bring him along slowly and just kind of let the Cavs play onto this one big four spacing type of situation that's worked all season for them, but in this series especially. But I think that's just looking at it from both Boston and Cleveland's perspective, I feel pretty optimistic that the shooting is going to regress to the mean. We're going to see both of these teams probably taking a healthy volume of threes, making a pretty decent amount of them just because that's how the NBA works now. But I also just kind of optimistically speaking think that Evan Mobley might have something geared up for Game 3, especially just with the luxury of having a home crowd cheering for him.
Yeah, I think that that's actually the most sustainable thing that we can look to of anything going on in the series and in the short term. The Cavs have not lost, if I'm not mistaken, at home in the postseason. Nope. And they're going to have the momentum and energy going into this game and another game after that. So Celtics cannot come with a level of energy and focus that they have been playing with in the last game if they don't want to end up in a serious amount of trouble. The Cavs are not a bad team. They have been told how great they are, the Celtics, so much that when they come out and they blow a team out, they really believe it a little bit too much. And what needs to be sustainable and can be sustainable for them is how they approach this game. I'm assuming we're going to see what we see in terms of the bounce backs, right, that we have seen mm-hmm. all season long. But if you recall, even though they never lost three in a row, they did lose two in a row multiple times this season. Sure, no long losing streaks, but if you lose two games in a row in the postseason, you're in trouble. So I'm going to be watching very closely on how they comport themselves from the tip to the end of the game.
Yeah, everyone, Evan, maybe you can help me with these stats. It was something like the Cavaliers shot the eighth most threes, but they were 15th in three-point percentage. So they're okay with shooting, even if they're not always going to connect. Yeah. But
sounds about right. If it's for the postseason, yes. I think for the regular season, the numbers are kind of close, but there's a little bit of static in there. So, but it's been a trend for them all year. Just they take a lot, but sometimes they become a little too infatuated with it, and it can kind of mm-hmm. disrupt their flow.
But what I was going to say is the thing about probability is like you can have back-to-back hot games. Like they don't have to be a dynamite shooting team to have two or, goodness forbid, if you're the Celtics, three games in a row where they shoot 40-something percent from three. So I don't know if that's sustainable, but that is something I'm curious about. I think what I'm about to say is true and thus sustainable. I don't think any one Celtics defender can guard Donovan Mitchell. Derek White and Drew Holiday aren't fast enough. And if they are fast enough, they're not strong enough. The number of times where Mitchell has beaten them off the dribble has been probably deeply problematic. And the number of times where Mitchell creates a little bit of separation, the way that all, you know, lead ball handlers do with that off arm, and White and Holiday are flying, and Mitchell's just like open for a shot or a pass. I don't know. I don't think Drew Holiday's getting younger, and I don't know Derek White is getting stronger. And they can double him. They can try to guard him with Jaylen. They can try to guard him with Jason. But Boston's highly vaunted on-ball defenders right now aren't getting it done. And that feels sustainable for the Cavs.
That's actually an interesting note. I kind of will keep it. I am surprised just with how Mitchell has performed against, like, whether it's Brown, Holiday, White, like the Celtics have the horses in the stable to kind of, you know, make him work for his shots. And I'm not saying he hasn't worked on some possessions, but there are some shots where, like, there are heat checks where he's trying to just rip the heart out of the Celtics and their fans, at least in game two. But it is a little bit of a stark contrast just to how, like, rough Jalen Suggs, Gary Harris, and everyone else in Orlando was against him. And my only counterpoint to that is just, you know, you always have to be cautious with his knee. He did kind of bump knees in the fourth quarter, and he was walking a little gingerly after that. Thankfully, the Cavs called off the dogs, and so did the Celtics too, so they could just ride this one out. But, like, I think that is just something worth watching on a game-to-game basis, because there could be a moment where, like, his knee just doesn't want to cooperate, and he'll start pressing, and then he kind of shoots himself out of a rhythm entirely. But, yeah, I think that is a fair point, at least to the first two games, and I am curious to see how the Celtics maybe kind of counterpunch that, whether that's doubles or just kind of maybe hitting Mitchell a little bit more physically, just because that's how the playoffs play. But that could be an interesting kind of X factor for the Cavs no matter what, just as long as the series goes on.
Okay, let's flip or change gears rather. Let's do the Celtics. What is, I guess I'm looking for like a sustainable thing that's good for the Celtics, because again, I feel like there's too much doom and gloom in the NBA. But if you think that there's a fatal flaw that needs to be addressed for Boston, we can, of course, talk about that. I'll let Justin go on this special Celtics Lab Locked On Cavs crossover. Celtics, I guess, Justin, you're just as much a guest as anyone. So, Justin, what's sustainable with the Celtics here?
What's sustainable is the Celtics bench is better and more varied than it played tonight. And I would expect to see, for a team that could capitalize on offensive rebounding, that is missing a shot blocker, to try some Xavier Tillman and Nimi Ashketa just a bit, to try to break up some rhythms when things aren't going their way. Like, I'm not saying that they need to be playing 20, 25 minutes a night, but I mean, if you're just getting beat up in the post, unleash Ketta, see what happens. Worst case scenario, he picks up some fouls. He's not going, like, when Tristan Thompson is on the floor, when Evan Mobley is on the floor, I think in either of those situations, he has some advantages he can use in certain situations. And as long as you game plan that into what you are going to use him for, I think it's perfectly capable to use deeper bench players to change things up a little bit. In the same kind of way that we saw Pritchard bring some fire, I think we can see some help from the bench, particularly in this series, particularly given what the two teams have going on right now for both of them.
I will say Cornette can't hang with Mobley. It doesn't seem like that's doable.
Cornette, I mean, in certain situations, like a little further away from the basket, but not right up next to it. He's too crafty.
Yeah, so maybe Cornette can match Mobley. I mean, with Tristan for minutes, but there were some tough Cornette minutes we saw here.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Evan, what about you? What's something sustainable from the Celtics?
I think that Justin was spot on, which is with the bench depth situation. It's just Cleveland. Sure, they get solid bench numbers from Caris LeVert, but he's just been so hot and cold this entire postseason run for the Cavs. There have been moments where, at least against Orlando, they had maybe two, nine max bench points in a game, just in that either came from LeVert in garbage time or Sam Merrill ripping off a couple three-pointers all of a sudden just to kind of give the Cavs a little bit of a shooting edge. But I think it's a pretty, like, just it's a smart analysis. Like, yeah, maybe look at Keita just because the Cavs went small in the first half, and then they threw Tristan Thompson right into the fire, who was, you know, cold off the bench. Sure, ready to play, but or have his number called, but, like, you know, threw into the fire and had a very effective 10 minutes after Evan Mobley picked up his fourth foul and kind of at least was playing physical and giving those just second chance opportunities for Clevelanders, you know, fighting at least through contact and kind of enforcing his will a little bit. So I think Boston just has that luxury of having more legs. I think, you know, if Cornette's not working, you look at Keita more, maybe you look at Tillman a bit more. I think you try to avoid those Al Horford Tillman lineups as much as you can if you're Joe Mazzulla, but otherwise maybe you look at Sam Hauser too. Maybe you try to play the Cleveland's game and go a little bit smaller. Maybe you look more like Sam Hauser as a guy who could hurt Cleveland a bit more on the perimeter because he has the ability to do so. And the Celtics just get a little bit more creative just because they have the luxury of not having maybe 7-8 viable guys at this juncture in the postseason. They have other guys that they can kind of plug and play and experiment with. And I think that's the beauty of a 7-game series is you can kind of experiment with certain lineups and wrinkles that may work. And then you just keep riding that wrinkle until it's ironed out by the opposition. But by then, hopefully you have, you know, another wrinkle that you can ride out until then.
I'm going to answer the question by like talking about an outlier, which is Boston was 8-for-35 from three. We saw it last year and game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals. Boston came up cold a number of years against Cleveland, many years ago against Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals. They had a similar shooting performance. When the stars align and you have your cold three-point shooting night on that, you know, clinching game, that's the problem. But similar to the Miami series, it seems unlikely that Boston is going to have another super duper poor shooting performance. So I think what is sustainable is Boston's shooting, and this was a blip, not a trend line. Because with respect to the Cavs, I mean, first of all, Boston smoked a ton of layups. Like, I think early in the chat, Justin, I said, oh God, like they're just not, there's a lot of bunnies out here that they're not connecting on. But, you know, they early on, they were passing the ball well and they just weren't hitting their shots. It was only later
really
they did
bad
that.
Bad shot selection in large chunks of the game, too. Just like unnecessarily difficult shots.
Yeah, right at the point where old habits die hard and they started doing the frustrating thing they do where they don't play to their level or to their talent. I was sitting next to a higher profile person who's been around the block for a while, and they were just ripping the Celtics. It was I don't know. We're the balanced science themed podcast, so I feel like we always have a level head.
I was like, I'm just tired of ripping the Celtics when they do this because they always find ways to do this.
Yeah, I was like a little thrilled by how sincerely this person just had no patience for the Celtics team. But I don't feel that way. I think that, you know, they had a bad shooting night and Cleveland had they had 60 points in the paint. That maybe is sustainable that Cleveland's going to win that battle, but to this degree, I don't know. All right, Evan, you in the business of making predictions?
Yeah, I kind of am, I'd say so. But
alrighty. Well, let's do this. Tell me, game five will be Wednesday night in Boston, and what will be the series standing?
I think it'll be tied up 2 apiece. And I coming into the series, I think folks who were thinking that maybe Boston was going to have an easy timeout, I think that the Porzingis injury doesn't change a ton, but it does change the calculus, at least just in terms of how the Cavs have to defend things. I mean, the Celtics are still loaded. They still have the two Jays. They have Drew Holiday. They have Derek White. They have a lot of ammunition and firepower just to really take care of business, even if Kristaps is out there or not. But, like, at least defending him, it makes it different. But I think it'll be tied up 2 apiece. And I know it might sound cliche, but whoever wins game five very well may win this series. But going into this one, I had Celtics in 6. So I think I'll be right on that one still. But at least heading into game five, it'll be tied up 2 apiece. What about you guys?
Justin. You want the boring podcast answer? I agree with you. I'll say that there is real risk for the Celtics to get in their own way and make this a real series and push it to at least 7 games. I don't know if there's a real chance for the Cavs to win this one, but if someone turns an ankle, anything can happen, right? This is a very close series. Closer than I think a lot of people want to give credit to the Celtics for it to be, but this is exactly why the Celtics have been pushed to not fritter away games, take care of business, and not find themselves in the finals after taking the hardest pass possible as they did in 2022. Sure. They haven't done that this year, but they could replicate some of that process if they don't come out and handle their business. And they may be surprised by the level of ire they get from the Cleveland fans when they show up.
They are, I will say, it will be a not so friendly environment for the Celtics. I think, you know, just the years of bad blood between these two teams, it's going to carry over if LeBron's not on the court.
We have to wrap, but now I'm so curious. If in 10 seconds or less, what are the odds that LeBron is on the court this time next year for Cleveland?
Oh, gosh. I want to say
that's not 9%.
Correct. I want to say 45 to 50%.
What do you know that we don't?
I'm so glad I asked. Cool. Okay, well, that we have to end there. Yeah, it'll be Celtics in 6, I guess. This was a spectacular crossover episode of the Celtics Lab podcast and the Locked On Cavs podcast. We can talk about Evan Damorell. I'm Cameron Tiptoe, and that's Dr. Justin Quinn. If the people like this and or the people who have to edit the podcast do an okay job, maybe we'll do this again because it's just a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
So Evan and Justin, thank you very much. This episode of the Celtics Lab podcast was brought to you by Prize Picks, the exclusive fantasy basketball partner of the CLNS Media Network, and by Game Time Tickets, last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Thank you all for listening. And hoops are fun. Chill with the hot takes. Not every game is a referendum on every team and every player that's ever left. Until next time, arrivederci.